Welcome back once again to the Pride of Detroit podcast, the POD cast. It's why we call it that, because it's a podcast. Don't ask why. It's simple. You should know this by now. We are Pride of Detroit, the SB Nation blog for the Detroit Lions of the NFL. Find us at prideofdetroit.com, on Twitter at Pride of Detroit, on Facebook look for Pride of Detroit. Find the podcast on iTunes and on Blog Talk Radio. Look for Pride of Detroit. Or if you're on Blog Talk Radio, look for the SB Nation Hub, and you can find us there, along with many other delicious SB Nation offerings of various stripe. So we got a four-man crew in here tonight. This is your master of ceremonies here, Chris Lemieux, writer for Pride of Detroit, on Twitter at MalkovichPlan, joined once again by Ryan Matthews at Ryan_POD.
Keep it right.
Alex Reno, Alex_Reno on Twitter.
Keep it tight.
And joining us tonight in the fourth chair is a man from across the pond, the digital pond. I don't even know if it's that, because that's supposed to be like a London reference, but he's not from London or England or anything like that. But he is from Sideline Report, the fan-sided blog for the Detroit Lions from the fan-sided network. Mike Payton. Hello, Mike Payton.
Yeah. Get it tight.
Okay. Yeah. If you can tell, the connection here is very bad right now. There's like a storm system passing through, so this podcast is going to be a little suspect. But Mike, Twitter, I think, is like SLR_Mike.
That's the one.
That's the one. Okay, you can find his thoughts there, too. And, yeah, this is a Pride to Detroit, this is a Lions podcast. And really, I'm really struggling to figure out what to talk with the Lions about tonight, guys.
Since you're struggling, we're struggling as well, Chris. You're not in the boat alone.
No, yeah, and, like, I'm struggling, like, technologically, too, because, like, everyone is, like, 2 pixels on my screen right now. Like, the storm is sparing nothing here.
You gotta worry about the audio. You don't gotta worry about looking at us.
Not a visual medium, as
no,
you always
yes,
remind me
yes,
every
week. Yes, it is. It is, so, yes.
You guys know what I really want to talk about? It's not the draft, and it's not DeAndre Levy. What I really want to talk about is the idiotic power rankings in March and the narratives that we're already hearing for the 2016 season. Like, I mean, what
Let's
do you guys
read
think about
free agency? Okay, free agency is not over yet, jackasses.
I mean, obviously, you know, I think we're going to have a whole summer full of everybody telling us the Lions aren't going to make the playoffs because of Calvin Johnson not being around and all this and that and the other thing and a 1-7 start at last year. I mean, what do you guys think about that? Are you prepared for the narrative of the off season?
I'm prepared for negative outlooks, but I'm I don't know. Like, I feel like I've worn myself out of fighting narratives back with the Calvin Johnson thing, so it's just, it is what it is. It's whatever. You're not going to get any respect for the Lions until you actually show up some stuff. Like, you gotta get past that at some point. I don't know. Now I've got a cat bugging me, too. This podcast could not start any worse.
No, it's okay. I'm a Lions fan, so I am prepared for all of the negative outlooks and all of the same old Lions talk. So, I mean, like, you were talking about the power rankings. Weren't we, like, ranked like 25th overall in like a power rankings already? I mean, like, it's just why even pour out this silly content this early?
Well, not just that, I saw a power ranking of the wide receiver duos just the other day. It was some 24/7 sports website that I've never even heard of, and they had the Marvin Jones and Golden Tate ranked at 26. I mean, we've never even seen these guys play together. But just like, from my understanding is, I mean, these guys both have very low drop rates. They're pretty sure-handed receivers that are both capable of being a 1A and 1B squad, not to mention you've got Theo Riddick and you've got Eric Ebron, who's improving every year. It seems to me that Matthew Stafford has a ton of weapons. Why are we all supposed to believe that loss of Calvin Johnson is just going to completely wreck this entire team?
Well, there is still the narrative that, you know, Stafford isn't. Like, most of what Stafford is because of Calvin Johnson. That's the narrative. I'm not saying whether that's true or not. I mean, I've come down on Stafford before, but I'm just, you know, trying to explain
you're
that.
You're a Stafford hater.
Stafford hater. God, I hate you. I hate you so much.
I love the Calvin Johnson made Stafford, you know, narrative. But the thing I love about it the most is, you know, the seven quarterbacks that Calvin Johnson played with before Matthew Stafford showed up. And I don't know why he didn't make those guys. I mean, why didn't he make John Kitna? I just don't understand it.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's complicated, but I really don't want to... I also didn't want to do this in the offseason, too, like start playing defense against national media. Because, again, my belief is that it's just going to keep coming in. And it is what it's going to be. Like, I mean, this is like if we were running like a Jaguars blog. And it's like, why do you guys picking the Jaguars to finish last? Well, it's because you're the Jaguars. Right? like we will gladly do that to any other team out there. But because it's our team, because the Lions, we will get hyper defensive about the fact that, like, what Bill Barnwell gives Lions a C or whatever for free agency because we overpaid Marvin Jones by, like, what, $2 million by his approximation or something.
Well, I guess, like, for me, it's just thought that like these guys just don't watch the games. Like, you know, me and Alex went back and forth with Bucky Brooks for like 3 hours straight last month. And Bucky knew nothing about Darius Slay, and we were throwing constant statistical data at him, and he just shut us down at every single turn. And Darius Slay is not a good cornerback, and it's just I guess it's a frustrating thing as a fan when you see these guys, these national media guys, they're perpetuating that the Lions are this horrible team, and then you really can't do anything about it because
it gets backed up on the field. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But no, I think I know where you're going. Like, there is some differences in that. I am curious, though, on the Levy side of things, because if only because it's not just about DeAndre Levy and his Instagram posts and what he said to the Free Press. We talked about that a little bit on Pride of Detroit, but there is also the whole kind of subset of that. While DeAndre Levy is making these comments, like, the NFL is trying to, like, scare the New York Times to stop comparing its tactics to the tobacco industry. And they can't do anything because, unlike ESPN, the Times has nothing over its head. Like, there's nothing the NFL can do to pressure the Times to back off what they're saying. So... yeah, it's a fascinating off season right now. I think that's the best word right now. It's fascinating, but at the same time, it's just long and boring. Like, I tried pitching this by you, Alex, if you wanted to talk about Robert Kimdichie and the fact that, like, this whole character narrative is about to fall by the wayside because, like, half the teams out there are now meeting with him. But I know you have other issues within Kimdichie too. So,
yeah, I don't think Kimdichie is even a first round talent. When we're talking about skill, like, he's the most, like, one of the most inconsistent players I've seen in the draft.
Like, right, but you differ in that way, right? Like most people are, like, taking him out of the first round because they're screaming about character issues. And we all know character issues are, like, really subjective in the NFL.
Yeah, like, so when I do my rankings, like, I don't even take in character issues. Like, I just do it kind of, like, completely skill-based. And so I gave him a second round grade based on that. But if we're talking about character issues too, like, I would even drop him further, like, to the third or fourth round.
I mean,
but
does it
really
matter?
No way that he's going to fall that far because he's, like, the most, like, he's just a complete athletic freak.
But I mean, do the character issues even matter? Like, I know Lions fans love throwing that out there. Caldwell's looking for high character guys. You know, this is what this organization's about. Every team wants to say that about their guys. So, and, like I don't want to hear about the character issues thing because I know exactly how the narrative goes on this. Speaking of narratives, since that seems to be the theme of this first segment, the narrative on Kimdichie is he has bad character issues. Well, now we suddenly everyone's seen him at the pro days, and now every team wants to meet with him. And what's going to happen is after those meetings, every team's going to come out and they're going to find a way to pass off the character issues by saying, We've met with him. We've expressed our concerns. We felt he's grown, or they'll say something like, you know, he just needs the right guidance or some other platitude to push him off a character issue, which we're still not sure what it was other than him falling out of a window while high.
Yeah, you have to consider, too, like, Bob Quinn went on record and all he said was that they're not going to tolerate domestic violence and gun charges. And that has nothing to do with Khamdichi right now. So it's entirely possible that we're going to take all the meetings with him and consider him for, I guess, the first or second round pick.
But doesn't that drive you crazy, like, every year that we do this with guys, like, that the character issue thing comes in and then we find ways to just pass it off?
Well, maybe not, like, we find it. I mean, I think, like, if you refer to the collective we as, like, the media find a way to pass it off, I think you pointed out, Chris, that it tends to be the teams that come out and say, you know what, we talked to this player, we did our due diligence, this player has shown contrition for their actions, so we're willing to, you know, move forward with him. We're not worried about the past. So they you know, they try to put the lipstick on the pig, you know, and try to just move forward and say that this character issue is not a problem.
Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess for me, I don't really care if he smoked pot in college, because I smoked pot in college, and I'm sure we all have smoked pot in college. I mean, it's not that big of a deal, and I'm still, you know, employed and happy and blah, blah, blah. But I think for me, the one character issue that caught my eye the most was when he made a point to say that, well, you know, Laramie Trenzel was in the room too, and he started making up stories at the combine, and just kind of telling different sides of different stories, and almost trying to bring his teammates in as if to say, like, you know, yeah, Laramie was there too, you know, it's not like I'm the only one who's doing this. And I guess that's the one thing for me is if you draft a guy like that and things don't work out, who's he going to blame? Is he going to blame the coach? Is he going to be one of those guys that blames all the players? Is he going to be a locker room cancer? I mean, that's the one thing that worries me about him.
Yeah, that's the legitimate character issues. Like, that's been there's another player in this draft that I've had that thought about, like Christian Hackenberg, who has been very busy throwing his Penn State coach, James Franklin, under a goddamn bus.
Oh, he's such a whiner.
Yeah.
Do not
and like, what is it, Todd Mache saying that, oh yeah, Christian Hackenberg was a second round pick, and I'm like, in what universe?
Seriously, no way. Come on, Todd.
Like, that's a character issue. That's what I like. I don't want to hear about, you know, suddenly you're afraid this guy is going to do X and X because he smoked pot and fell out of a window and there may be other things. I understand why those might be red flags, but those get passed off all the time in this league. The actual character issues, like, you want to talk about actual character issues, we've had it this week if you look around the rest of sports. You know, what was in the NBA? Russell D'Angelo? Like, suddenly...
D'Angelo Russell.
D'Angelo... God damn it. Okay, yes, D'Angelo Russell. Suddenly, like, you know, becoming persona non grata to the Lakers because he opens his can of worms by breaking the locker room trust. Like, that kind of stuff I am interested in when it comes to drafting, that you don't want what your guys are talking about there, about throwing guys under the bus. Like, that's an actual character issue.
Yeah, like, that's too late. Like, he's already been drafted.
Yeah, well, that's even worse for Russell, yeah.
Maybe I'm on the other side of the fence on this, but I think Russell did the right thing, man. If you're gonna cheat on the girl you're supposed to be married, you're an asshole, man.
I understand. I understand that, and I understand that in a vacuum. But in the case of, like, having a locker room around you, like, man, like, you broke, like, the sacred code of the locker room too. That whole situation's fascinating to me, though, because there is a lot of different angles like that.
Well, yeah, because then you start getting into, like, gender dynamics and what's going on. Like, you want to define what, like, the bro code is, and that just can get really toxic.
Well, that and, I'm pretty sure California is, like, a two-party state when it comes to, like, videotaping someone. So he didn't get consent to tape Nick Young, so there may even be, like, a lawsuit in his future.
Yeah, the Lakers are a mess, period.
Yeah.
this is a 15-win team here. Iggy Azalea should be the last thing on this team.
But it's the Lakers, man.
Well, this is the thing. I don't want to turn this into the Lakers podcast, but like D'Angelo Russell is the only player on that team that means a damn to the Lakers' future. Okay?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
So all of these other guys, they're shown the door before D'Angelo Russell is taken out of the equation. But like the one thing I want to circle back the wagons to in this talk about character issues is that, you know what, because of the rules that the NFL plays by right now, weed is a problem because weed will get you suspended. Like Martavis Bryant, he's done for the year.
Well, it'll get you suspended if you can't stop smoking it, because the NFL gives you every chance in the world to say, hey, we are going to be testing you on date X, and they give you like 3-4 months advance, which should be enough to get the TC out of, well, like 3 months advance, that's enough to get the TC out of your system. So you would imagine, so the only people they're catching with those things is people who basically have an addiction, people who can't stop, like Josh Gordon.
Yeah, you can talk about how stupid it is to like crack down on people smoking weed and that it's not even that bad and alcohol's worse and blah blah blah, but like every job has stupid rules, but you have to follow them no matter what.
Sure. But again, like, I think my point is that the NFL doesn't, like, the way the NFL has their drug tests set up, they don't want to catch you. They're giving you enough warning. The only people they're catching are basically the guys who can't stop.
Yeah, it's almost like getting tipped off, you know, like tipping off a restaurant that the health code is going to come in, you know, in 2 months, make sure you have everything clean. They're doing everything they can to make sure that these guys don't fail, but they continue to.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, if you're going to make all this money and have this chance, this career that anybody would die for, any four of us would die to be an NFL player, you're just an idiot if you're going to continue to smoke weed and do drugs and do stupid I just don't get it.
Or you have an addiction, which is an illness, and you need help for that addiction. You know, that's kind of the thing. Yes. Absolutely. You can't get like, you can actually
get addicted. It can be a habit, and like habits
can become addictions. Like, I'm not saying physical addiction, like for marijuana, as I would for like, you know, nicotine or cocaine or heroin. But you can absolutely, in much a way, guys get addicted to things that aren't drugs. You can get mentally addicted to marijuana.
Well, maybe it's more so that they're addicted to the lifestyle that they had before they were in the NFL, which was partying in college all the time, smoking pot.
Well, I mean, people take the pot, too, as a painkiller, and this is a very painful sport at the same time, too. So, there's a lot of facets to that. I think we should probably table that for another day, because I think the 10 minutes of allotted, like, trying to talk about football is up. So
we can move on.
We can move on if you guys
celebration.
Want.
Celebration.
Let's do it.
We have another month to talk about the draft, guys. Don't worry. You're going to get your draft talk. Alex Reno's
here. So much draft talk, man. By the way, also on Pride Detroit, if you got into the community mock draft, congratulations. You get to be a GM. It's what you've always wanted to be.
Yeah, I tried to hand it off, but I'm in it.
Yeah, so. I can't help but notice that you got like all of the Lions picks, too.
Well, it's usually been Jerry or Jeremy, and I even like wanted to hand it off, but you know.
So they have to hand it to like, an adult or something.
To this, so I don't want to say anything else. I love you, Jeremy.
Hi, Jeremy. Yes, you're probably listening to this god awful thing that we are desperately trying to put together. So yeah, no, there's going to be a whole month of this still, and I hate it. I hate that it is this long until the draft.
Yeah,
and
you guys
like,
can talk.
Like, look, man, like CBS Radio, ESPN Radio, I keep hearing their promos, and it's always the same words from their big voices. The football season never stops. And you know what? I kind of wish it would. I kind of wish it would for like 1 month, just no news at all.
It's going to get worse every single year. Like, we're going to have football 7 days a week.
I don't know if they should have it 7 days a week, but that's another conversation, too.
They spread it out, like, once you think it's all over, then you got like the supplement draft, and it's just ridiculous.
I wish they would move the draft up just a week, because it happens during my wedding anniversary every year, and it's pretty hard to be like, you know, honey, I gotta watch the fourth round. You don't understand. I gotta see it.
If you are the kind of guy who's watching the fourth round, like, what was it, a couple of years ago when Michael Sam was, like, kissing his boyfriend after he got drafted in, what was it, like, the sixth round by the Rams?
It was, like, one of the last picks, the seventh rounds.
And all of a sudden, there's, like, all these people, like, screaming, how do I explain this to my kids who are watching? I'm like, well, maybe your kids shouldn't. Maybe you should be reevaluating your life choices so your kids aren't there with you watching the seventh round of the NFL draft.
That and try to be a decent human being.
Well, that's a given too. But I'm just saying, like if your kids are there with you watching the seventh round of the NFL draft, you're raising them wrong to begin with. Like, there should be something else in their life they should be doing.
Hey, spoiler alert, look at the TV guide. When the draft ends, you can go online. All the players' names will be right next to the team that they drafted them.
Yes, sir.
And you can come up with your hot takes from there. So send your kids outside, have them read a book, maybe have them climb a tree.
Don't climb a tree.
Or, like Reno said, you know, teach them to be accepting individuals and productive members of society who accept people for who they are.
Don't climb a tree. You could die.
Stick, play some baseball in the backyard.
Climb a tree, Chris. That's a bad take. Climb a tree.
I'm just doing that to mess with you right there. I've climbed my share of trees, and I've got stuck in my share of trees, too.
Did Superman come save you?
No, sir, but that is a great transition. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we need to talk about something that over the weekend befuddled all of us. We all went to go see it, and I'm sorry, this is the end of Lions talk here. We might get some football questions in the mailbag, but this is important. This is really important because if we don't talk about this, the Pride of Detroit staff will be torn asunder. Find out what that is when we come back next. All right, before we begin this next segment, I will warn you, we are talking about Batman versus Superman, a recently released movie. So, spoiler alert, we're doing this in earnest. If you want to miss all of it, please jump ahead this podcast to time marker 52 minutes. You could do that right now, or else, here we go. All right, I just said already at the start of this, we're talking about Batman versus Superman, so the cat's out of the bag, like... Okay. We need to give some backstory to this and why we have taken over the Pride of Detroit podcast to talk about Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. Why are we even here talking about this to begin with? Like, what's happening? We are a Lions blog. We should be talking about the Detroit Lions, but we're not. Why?
Because holy shit, that movie.
That's all you're going to say, holy shit, that movie.
Holy shit. I passed that off to Ryan Matthews because he had probably the greatest reaction of us all.
Yeah, Ryan Matthews was the first one to go in there. He was the first one to experience hell, I think.
I was the first man to storm the beaches of Normandy, and I walked out. I walked out of that theater just, and I think Mike can echo my sentiments. I walked out of that theater a confused man. I wasn't sure what happened over the previous 2.5 hours. And furthermore, so I was even more confused about why it all happened. I just need to get your guys' takes on it because I think I can maybe fill in the gaps of where my confusion exists.
You came into the Slack room like immediately after getting out of that movie, and the things you were saying were the words of a madman. Like,
I was having an existential crisis. Absolutely.
You were absolutely. I was afraid you were just going to like quit. Like right there and then. And I'm not even talking about quit Pride Detroit. I'm talking about like quitting from the world. Like, yeah, you'd go live in Tibet or something and eat like cockroaches.
I've never seen that type of Ryan Matthews in my life.
I've never seen a man like Ryan Matthews, a teacher of America's youth, so like disjointed, so just taken out from logic and reason and the world.
Yeah, you know what? And then when I showed up to class, on Monday, usually I'll ease into lesson. I don't want to, you know, immediately bombard kids with schoolwork. They just got done with the weekend. I'm interested in hearing about their weekends or if they did anything interesting. And I was completely okay with the fact that nobody brought up Batman versus Superman. Because if anybody would have, I would have deaded that conversation immediately and said, get out your writer's notebooks. It's time to work. Like, I would have assigned them, like, a large essay immediately on the spot and told them it was due at the end of the hour. And if not, then there's zero chance they'd pass high school.
Now, why were you, like, is it mostly just how the movie flowed, or is it because you are a DC fan yourself and just was mad? Like, what triggered this pathogen in you?
Chris, I'm still confused about it. I've seen it twice now, and I can't pinpoint it. I keep going back, and I'm ready to go back for a third time, probably sometime during this week.
You're the abused girlfriend.
I am the abused girlfriend. See, this is the thing, is I'm going to go back. I'm going to have my hat with my brim bent. I'm going to have it with my hood on. I'm going to pay for a matinee ticket on, like, Tuesday next week during spring break, and I'm going to see it a third time.
You sound like you're going to watch a porno or something, like how you're dressed.
Like,
Don't be ashamed, man.
I am Pee Wee Herman in the theater. All right.
Yeah. Yikes! It's got too real. Way too real.
That's the last thing that this movie offers me is any sort of pleasure in any sort. It just continually just messes with my mind.
See, I thought it was great. I don't know. I had to read articles afterwards, and I got it. Like, I understood it once I started reading articles about, like, all the stuff that happened. Like, I didn't understand it when I was watching it, but it made sense to me when I listened to other people.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just because, like, Ryan's accused me of basically, like, having this all spoiled for me when I went in, but I had no problem following along with a lot of it. And, like, there was two scenes that really made me angry. Like, why did you do this? And there was, like, a couple other things with it. Like, because I'm a cinematography buff, and the biggest failing of Zack Snyder was that, like, there were a bunch of scenes where there's, like, no exposition set up.
I was going to say, this movie could have definitely benefited from some exposition.
Like, not even exposition as in, like, hey, what's going on? Exposition is, like, when you cut to a new scene. You know, you usually get, like, a flyby of some building to set the scene or some other, like 2 seconds of something else before you jump right into the action going on. There was none of that. It's just all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, no warning, but we're going to completely change the scene to a very important moment that we're already in the middle of. Like, it gives you no chance to adjust and, like, be ready mentally.
But that's kind of how Snyder shoots, though. I mean, sure. everything is up close. It's almost like a comic panel, and everything is really happening fast. It's all in your face. He doesn't really do wide shots or anything like that. At least I don't think he does. I think that he was trying to make it look like a comic book.
Well, yeah, and I totally see where you're coming from on that, Mike, because I got that feeling too watching it. I was like, this would probably be better as a comic book than it would be as a movie on how it was shot in its cinematography. And I could totally see where he's trying to replicate that. But I think at some point too, like, at some point you've got to realize the medium you're working with is different. And yes, I don't know if Zack Snyder's no. Yeah,
that's the problem is that it's a movie. Like, we have sound, we have sound, we have music, we have opportunities to do things that the comic book medium does not afford you, so you should take advantage of all of those opportunities and give us a flyby shot that we are all of a sudden in LexCorp
or you're in the Daily Planet now, like, just something, anything.
Now that you said LexCorp, okay, like, my problem was not the cinematography, it was Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor.
Really? I thought he was great. I thought he was perfect.
No, he wasn't playing Lex. He was playing, like, Lex plus Joker.
Like a half-assed Joker. Yeah,
but you have to understand, he's not Lex Luthor. He's Lex Luthor Jr. He's not Gene Hackman. I mean,
even after he got his hair shaved, though, like, he was still acting like some crazy psychopath. Like,
yeah, that's the thing. Like, Lex isn't supposed to be a psychopath. He's supposed to be this ultimate humanist who believes in the power of humans, and the whole idea is that he just hates the idea of a god above him. And instead, he just comes off this crazy, like, senior out of UMass Amherst who's just very angry at God and just. Just read Nietzsche or something.
He's supposed to be this guy that hates all of this supernatural shit, and then here he is, like, in this deleted scene, like, worshiping Darkseid.
I'm pretty sure if you haven't seen the scene, I'm pretty sure it's basically set up so that it's going to be Darkseid in the Justice League movie. Like, everything's been set up for it.
That's one of the only things in this movie that I really enjoyed was Lex Luthor. I really liked because it was a big departure from the character. And let me start off by saying I hate Superman. I hate him so much. I hate him so much. It's
like, are you talking about the actor that played him, or are you talking about the whole?
I'm talking about the character.
Okay.
Christopher Reeves. I'm talking about George Reeves. I'm talking about anybody who's ever played Superman. Even Ben Affleck played Superman once for kind of. I just don't like Superman. It's always him versus Lex Luthor and blah blah blah. But this was a whole new level of the story. Now I actually kind of like this character. Now I like what's going on in his world. I mean, granted, I fell asleep in the movie theater for 20 minutes.
Superman?
Yeah, I fell asleep for 20 minutes. I missed the whole saving Martha Kent thing. I guess I missed like the best Batman scene of the entire movie. But
yes, you did.
Yeah, I would even say that's better.
Not apparently, you did, Mike.
Yeah, I would even say that really scene
sucks. And I have to go get my trench coat and pull my brim down to go see it again too. Now,
I would say that scene's even better than some of like the Nolan fight scenes. Like, I think. Like, we can mock Ben Affleck all we want about playing Batman in this, but, like...
No, you can't. He was amazing.
Well, there's nothing about mocking, because let me give my stamp of approval for Ben Affleck, because
he nailed it.
I have been describing, he is the Hannah Montana of Batman's, okay? He's the best of both worlds. He's the best, like, combination of Bruce Wayne and Batman that I've ever seen, like, on the theater.
Right, because I think we said before, like, you know, Christian Bale made a good Bruce Wayne, but not so great Batman, and...
Michael Keaton was a great Batman, and he lacked in Bruce Wayne.
Yes, but...
George Clooney was a really good Bruce Wayne.
Oh, for the love of...
I mean, George Clooney is Bruce Wayne. He's a millionaire playboy. I mean, that's George Clooney.
No, but yeah, Ben Affleck, I think he nailed everything, including the extra angle, too, of the idea of an aging Bruce Wayne, of an aging Batman that's supposed to be there from the Frank Miller Dark Knight Rises, who just is like paranoid and, you know, kind of losing his grip on a lot of things. He played those so fantastically.
It was awesome.
And the dynamic between him and Jeremy Irons as Alfred was
Jeremy Irons,
totally refreshing. Right. I mean, Michael Caine, great Alfred, Christian Bale, you know, a solid Batman, like you said, a great Bruce Wayne. But I really enjoyed this dynamic, this different take on the character with the more veteran Bruce Wayne and Ben Affleck playing him. I thought he did a wonderful job.
Yeah. And I know we're going to differ on this, but I didn't mind at all the woman who played Wonder Woman. I'm blanking on her name right now. I thought
Gal Gadot or something.
Gal Gadot.
Yeah. Israeli actor. I thought she struck a fantastic Wonder Woman. She's good.
I don't think she's the most attractive woman out there, but she was good.
No, but you don't need that. That's not the point of Wonder Woman, is to be just eye candy. That's not
all
the
I can
point.
Think about is Elektra and Daredevil, guys.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let me say this about Wonder Woman. Was it awesome seeing her on screen and the Hans Zimmer composition that he had for when she decided to show up and start? You know.
Yes, that was like people.
Guitar riff was incredible.
People started applauding in the theater when she showed up like that. Like it was like the best part of the movie.
Yeah, well,
we've been waiting for this since the 70s.
Because no one's really done Wonder Woman. Like, they've tried so hard to make Wonder Woman work. They tried the TV series, and it's like, holy crap, we finally get, like, this badass Wonder Woman that's not, like, you know, that's not, like, some weird sex symbol or anything like that. It's a perfect cut of what it could be. Even though the story behind her is kind of weird that she's looking for a photo or something.
And that's the thing. Like, does she really work? Like, when we get those three characters on screen for the first time, you know, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, like, is it really, like, it's a 2.5-hour movie. Like, there's something to be said about how Marvel was able to set up their universe with these individual characters, and I'm not saying that's the only way to do it. But with that being said, do we really get the payoff of knowing that Wonder Woman's only motivation in this movie is to find a picture of her and Chris Pine?
Hold up. Was that Chris Pine in that
Chris
picture?
Pine?
Yeah, Chris Pine? Yeah, what is that?
Yes,
You guys didn't notice.
I didn't pay attention to that picture.
I did not.
She was taking my attention in like the trench coat and the suit. Like she was taking my attention in that like World War One photograph.
Was it just that, or like, do you guys just not believe that she just wants to help save the world or something? Like, I can't believe that it's just a photograph.
Yeah, like that felt a little strained, but I forgave that. I suspended my disbelief on that. And like Marvel kind of does do that, but they're also taking like 6 movies to get around to the point, whereas it seems like DC's on like a fast track. And that's kind of maybe why this movie's a little disjointed too.
You know what really annoyed me about that whole photograph scene was that, you know, Bruce Wayne, he gets this whatever thing from Lex's computer, blah blah blah, and it's all the metahumans, and it's the Flash, and it's Aquaman, and it's Cyborg, and all that. And for some reason, Lex set them all up with their own logos already, and that just seems so stupid to me.
He had a graphic designer design custom logos.
Each walked out of the theater at that exact moment. That was just so dumb to me.
Can we all agree that Aquaman is the most boring superhero ever?
Yeah, okay, look, that's the oldest trope in comic book fandom, is that no one cares about Aquaman. I understand that he's core to the Justice League, but no one gives a damn. You could replace him with anyone.
I already don't care about Superman, but Aquaman's even worse.
I'm a little concerned that Green Lantern is going to have nothing to do with
this. You need to reboot Green Lantern. That's kind of the problem. And also,
I thought there was...
Hashtag reboot Spider-Man.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's for Jeremy.
Spider-Man.
That's for Jeremy.
Spider-Man.
By the way, whoever the hell is playing Flash, can we just, like, get rid of him and get the Flash from the TV series?
Okay, I think you're just being a hater now. Like,
no, I'm attached to the Flash from the TV series.
I like Gustin or whatever the fuck his name is. Like, he's Grant a good Gustin. Actor, but that doesn't mean nobody else can play him.
I can tell you right now that I'm familiar with the guy who I can't remember his name, but I'm from who's playing
Ezra Miller.
Ezra Miller. He's in a lot of movies. He's a phenomenal actor. I mean, this is you're not getting some guy that does TV shows or anything. Like, this is a really good actor. So I mean, sure, I don't know if that eases anybody's feelings on it, but at least you're getting somebody good.
I guess I just kind of, that makes me feel by better. The way, that kind of transitions well into like the other scene I really hated from that movie. The whole I'm pretty sure where that's the Flash coming back in time. Right. That's what that was. That whole fucking Inception thing where it's a dream right after another fucking dream, which, by the way, no dream sequence has any kind of warning that you're about to jump into a dream sequence. It just smash cut. And all of a sudden it's Batman after the apocalypse. And, you know, now that I know it's Darkseid, that whole dream sequence makes a little more sense. Actually, no, wait, it makes less sense. Because now, instead of just being a complete, nightmare, all of a sudden, you have these, Darkseid connections with the Omega symbol and the parademons. Like, what am I supposed to do with this now? So it's, a dream and a premonition. But then, before that thing even ends, you cut to another dream, or maybe it's not a dream, of the Flash suddenly showing up out of nowhere screaming a bunch of stuff that has no bearing on the plot in this movie at all. I don't care if it's meant for the next film.
It does, though.
No, it doesn't. He's Lois Lane's the key, but she doesn't do anything. Batman doesn't use it to remember anything to help him with anything.
Maybe he's trying to say that Lois is the key to bring Superman back to life.
Why even use it in this movie, though? Because then that requires you... that's the other problem with starting the movie, right? It requires, a deep knowledge of what goes on in Man of Steel. Why would you do that? You need to... you can't do that, you need to have it kind of contained in its own movie. You can't throw this thing in there and then expect people to, dive for it to be ready for the next film.
But at the time, too, in that movie, at the time, Batman still hated Superman... Right?
Ryan, is this helping you out at all?
No, I'm still just lost. Okay. I don't know. This is a 9/11 truth film.
Do you think maybe that that's what this is? Deep down at its core?
It's literally, I think it might be Zack Snyder's, version of Stanley Kubrick's, The Shining. It's not really a film about The Shining anymore. It's about, Native American genocide, the moon landings or something. I don't know.
What if it's setting up for, a future film where Superman goes crazy, or you have, Bizarro or something, and then like Flash goes back in time,
trying to warn him about Superman.
Okay, here's the thing though: is that the premonition or the dream that we're talking about that Bruce has, where he's trying to acquire some kryptonite. This is clearly maybe not down to a T. Like, I really hope that this is an instance where, like, at the beginning of Batman vs Superman, is the first like 5 or 6 minutes is literally shot for shot Man of Steel from Bruce's perspective. I hope we don't get this same scene in a following in an upcoming Justice League film.
By the way, go on, Ryan.
Go ahead.
I was about to say shout outs at least though to that like flashback to the Man of Steel thing, because that's where it got really Detroit for me. For people who don't know, they shot this film in Detroit, and I could tell immediately what streets Ben Affleck was racing down the car in downtown Detroit. I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, they're just blowing up the Kobo over there. Okay.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So the other thing, I mean, if you did stay all the way until the end of the credits when they rolled past and, you know, they gave a shout out to Michigan with a pure Michigan symbol, in hopes of seeing maybe some like after credits,
I stayed for that.
Teasers.
I'm a scumbag like that.
Spoilers, nothing happens, so don't even worry about staying. Save your time. Beat the crowd. But the thing is that, like, part of, like, Darkseid's, like, abilities is that he can, like, plant memories in people's minds. So who knows if maybe – because there's another, dream, like, messed up sequence where Bruce is, like, in the – he's in the
the crypt?
He's in the crypt, right, of the Waynes. And
yeah, the black blood.
Blood leaking out, and then, like, the bat, you know, comes out of the tomb or whatever. So who knows if this is, like, Darkseid just, like, messing with Bruce's mind. But there's definitely, like, the parademons. There's the Omega Beams. But I totally agree with you, Chris. Like, this is a cool little Easter egg. But, like, is this really important? Like, without any exposition, you have not been introduced to the Flash yet at this point.
Yeah,
like,
and the
data hasn't been encrypted yet. You have this guy just, like, screaming at you. Like, I was so confused. I'm still confused. I don't know why.
Right.
Flash
I mean, like, that's kind of the difference, because, like, all the Marvel movies, they're completely accessible for people who aren't Marvel fans. We know about Darkseid. We know about Flash being able to travel through time because we're all DC fans here. We all love DC comics. We understand these references Snyder's throwing in there. But for anyone coming from the outside, that's got to be really hard.
Yeah, I think this movie was definitely made for hardcore fans,
but they hate it though.
Yeah,
I don't think they hate it. If you go
if I may, and I want to kind of cap off this segment here,
sure.
Because Zack Snyder of Detroit Jock City, I think is that the did I have that blog right?
Yeah.
Okay, Detroit Jock City. Our own Zack Snyder at Zack Snyder spelled ZAC for Zach. He got a lot of the hate mail. We were trying to have him on for this podcast. He unfortunately could not make it. And people, of course, as are they want to do on Twitter, lashed out because they thought it was actually the director, Zack Snyder. And his mentions are hilarious. His whole thing is hilarious. And I want to kind of cap this off by reading some of the stuff from his timeline, if that's okay with you guys.
Oh, it's perfect. Go ahead.
Okay, Ashley Jade sends him, "Whoever keeps giving Zack Snyder CG money, y'all need to stop." Zack replies by saying, "No, please send money." Let's see. Let's go up here a little bit. I'm trying to find this here. Let's see here. Zack Snyder's vision aligns with the DC is the Dark Knight Returns, but I'd rather see a DC movie universe that draws. He replies, "Big fan of the Dark Knight series." I'm trying to find this because someone actually was, like, talking about punching him in the face. Let's see here. Oh, God.
Well, the best thing about Zach's Twitter profile is his bio where he says, "I did not ruin your favorite superhero franchise."
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Spicy Hazu. This is the best one. "If you like being punched in the face for nearly 3 hours by Zack Snyder's id, then who boy I." Zach replies by saying, "I'm a lover, not a fighter." And then this person replies in all caps, "I'm sorry, this was a typo. I imagine that you are a cool and good person that would never fight anyone."
Because he still thinks that he's actually Zack Snyder.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh my. Like, his mentions, like, he couldn't retweet some of them because some people were actually threatening him with violence. Like, not him, but the actual Zack Snyder.
This is like the time that Brandon Marshall said that the Lions were the Bears' younger brother, and everybody attacked Brandon Marshall from the Denver Broncos instead.
Yeah, this happens a lot on Twitter.
Check Twitter profiles. It's not that hard. I like Zack Snyder from Detroit Jock City, but what, he has like 1,000 followers? Don't you think that if he were the Zack Snyder, he'd have a lot more followers than that?
I just love that everyone has misspelled Zack, too. Like, he went and searched for his name, not just people using his, like at him. People weren't going at Zack Snyder. They were, like, he was just searching for people spelling Zack, Z-A-C, in a lot of things, too. Here's some more. Let's hear. Entrusting Zack Snyder with the DC film universe was the absolute worst decision anyone could have made. Zack Snyder, what failed to direct the most crucial film to DC? Like, there's a lot here, and I really wish we had Zach on, because he would have, like, provided some great fun, and I already see there's a few deleted tweets, too. Oh, yeah, like,
it was a great move.
Actually, this is the great one. Has Zack Snyder ever read a comic book? And Zach replied, ever? Yes, but not more than 4 or 5 in my life. So.
Zach's a funny guy.
Yeah.
Top-notch tweeting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I actually didn't mind this movie. I really didn't. I understand why it's confusing, and there's a few scenes that are infuriating, and I never want to see another Batman origin scene again. I don't really... I know they get shot. I know Martha and Thomas Wayne get shot. We don't need to see this again.
Spoiler alert. I give him credit
for only lasting for, like, 2 minutes this time. Like, I honestly thought it was going to even be longer.
But the slow-mo was killing me there, and the pearls and everything else.
It wasn't that bad.
You know what, though? The thing, if you... Yes, we've all grown tired of Batman's origins. But, I mean, in the culminating scene, you know, it's funny that this movie was built off two names, and it's one name that ends the conflict when you know, Clark finally, you know, says the word Martha. But that's also the only name that's spoken during the revelation of, you know, Batman's origins is Thomas uttering the word Martha.
Yeah.
And whether or not, you know, that sets off something in Bruce, clearly that's what happens. That's great. But you know what?
It was necessary.
You say, Chris, you don't mind this movie. The problem is that I've minded this movie way too much.
I guess. I just went in and I came out. I'm like, okay, I get this. Except for like a couple things, I get this. I understand where he's going at, and I respect it. And it's not the same cup of tea that Marvel's offering. And maybe that's it, because some of these reviews about Batman vs. Superman have just felt personal. Like, people are just offended that this kind of movie existed in the first place.
I wish that they would have gone into Lex's origin instead of Batman's. Like, I wanted to know why
Lex hated
Superman so much. Like, we know that he hates Superman, but, like, we didn't see why he hated him in that movie.
Yeah, they just, it felt like they were just kind of dismissing Lex as a character. That was, I can understand that quibble.
It's so weird.
Like, I think what Lex is trying to accomplish is to just have power and just unlimited power, and Superman is the only thing that can actually stop him. I mean, you saw he blew up the Capitol. He obviously can get past politicians without a problem, but Superman is the only thing that can stop Lex Luthor.
I don't know. I don't know if it's power, because he seems to just have a singular obsession with Batman, with Superman. Like, that seems to be his, like, his beef, is he got, like, a personal thing with Batman because he represents X. And I think, like, it's some kind of weird kind of, he sees Batman as God and he hates God, or I don't know. This we're 25 minutes into this conversation, though, so we maybe should cap this off here. I'm sure we could do like 3 more podcasts just on Batman versus Superman, though.
Yeah, there was just no real backstory with him, and I'm just kind of frustrated that we didn't see that.
Ryan, let's leave this to you as final thoughts, because this movie affected you the most, I think.
Well, I mean, we can leave it off on this, but we'll talk about it the next podcast after I go see it for a third time.
No, next podcast we're talking about WrestleMania.
Can we all at least say that we're all excited for Suicide Squad?
Hype for Suicide Absolutely. Squad. Hype for Hype. Suicide Squad. I'm still hyped for Wonder Woman, and I will probably still go see Justice League.
And I will guarantee, book it right now. Book this guarantee. The director of Suicide Squad will wind up being the director of the Justice League movie.
Really?
Ooh.
Ooh, all right.
Bold proclamation from Mike.
Considering they're about to start filming.
But will you guarantee it?
I will not guarantee it. That's
that's reserved for Sheed. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a little too deep for me.
All right.
That's only for Sheed. Okay. Coming up next, we're going to get to the mailbag, and we've got some questions about Lion stuff, and more importantly, WrestleMania. We are on the road to WrestleMania, as they keep telling me a million times. All right, we've got the mailbag here. You can send all your questions to @PrideOfDetroit on Twitter or in the Ask POD article posts that we throw up on PrideOfDetroit.com, usually about a week or so before, like the day or so of or before the podcast recording. This one's coming a little later, so this mailbag's a little musty because it's been sitting here, but we will get through them. Do you guys want to start with a Batman versus Superman question? This isn't no spoilers in this one, but I just wanted to get to this. But
that's how we were done with this.
Okay, well, we're done with this then. It's just someone asking in what universe just Big Haircut just wants to know in what universe Batman has a chance against Superman without using what he calls a banned substance, kryptonite, which I didn't realize that's supposed to be banned.
Without? I mean, no chance.
I mean, it's fine that, I don't know, I think maybe you misconstrued, like, a banned substance just because he wasn't getting government permission to get it imported into the country from what they found it in the Indian Ocean.
Yeah, like something, I don't know.
Okay, the world in which Batman can beat Superman in is the world of comics, where anything can happen.
Well, this is something I think the movies, as far as like a superhero character, does not get across about Batman. He's supposed to be in the DC universe like the world's greatest detective. He's supposed to be like hyper smart.
Yes.
Well, like he's not only Sherlock Holmes, but he's like supposed to be a guy who knows how to plan everything out in like really advanced, like make plans that like anticipate the actions of people like 8, 10, 20 decisions down the line. Like,
yeah,
he plots all that out.
Yeah, he has fail safes for if every, you know, DC character decides to go, you know, AWOL or decides, you know, turn on themselves, or some corrupt politician like Ronald Reagan decides to control Superman for his own doing. But this is the thing, is that because it's the world of comics, anything can happen.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, but to be fair, like, Batman beat Superman once in the comics, right?
Yeah, but that's the point, is that these things can happen. Like, I don't know if we're under this guise, like, just because we're so familiar with the Nolan universe where, you know, it's supposed to be grounded in reality. Like, okay, we understand that Batman, yes, is a human, but, like, you have to move past that. Like, comics,
right.
Like, we've talked about, comics are different than film.
Right, but I'm just saying, all of the Batman films, they kind of play down the whole detective angle. It's just, you know, some vigilante out there beating guys up. They don't really play up the whole...
They do. Yeah, they don't play up the whole world's greatest detective thing, so...
Yeah, so they do a disservice there, and I think people then kind of, you know, don't think as highly of what Batman can do to Superman in that regard.
And I mean, isn't that kind of what, like, plays out in Batman vs. Superman? Like, Bruce has, like, all of these traps set up very, like...
Well, let's not do more and thoughtful. More spoilers. We told the people we're done with the spoilers.
Yeah, well, here's a spoiler. Bleep this out, Chris. Superman...
Oh, my God.
Well, all
okay.
right. Let's,
all right, let's move on. Next question. Yeah.
Bleep.
If
meet your doomsday...
Jeremy Reisman, if Cam Newton is the self-proclaimed Superman of the NFL, who is the Batman, and who would win in a battle?
Von Miller, hello. Did we not watch the Super Bowl?
I guess. I want to have Josh Norman as Batman, but the problem is they're on, like, the same team, which I guess makes sense, like, down the line, but... For the idea
that's
of Batman,
good, that's a good answer, actually.
Yeah, but like for the idea, like because considering what Josh Norman does to people, yeah, I like him as Batman. But yeah, it's not like you're going to have a Batman versus Superman scenario with Cam versus Josh. But I mean, don't they team up eventually?
About, if we're talking about Cam's kryptonite, I mean, it's obviously Von Miller.
I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is clearly Batman.
What the fuck? All right,
shut this down. Over, guys. Podcast over. Okay, let's see. Next question, Jeremy, as always. Lions, we're going to Twitter for this one. Lions News at Lions News for you. Are you going to use them, meaning the questions, this time? Yes.
Wait, what?
We're doing it right now, right?
Yep, we are. All right, okay. Next question. Neon Knight at I Run Amok 63 asks, greetings, guys. Hello, Neon. I'm going to say his name right here. How does Jeff Schwartz. Jeff. God damn I hate Jeff. These German names. How does Jeff Schwartz?
How does Jewish?
How does Jeff Schwartz fit? Depth or a potential starter?
Depth. It's a 1 year. How many million dollars?
I don't think I've seen the numbers for it yet, but okay, it is
I'm
1 year.
I'm assuming it's like a couple million dollars. I'm assuming it's depth. It's going to be like a guy that can play guard, swing tackle maybe. Like, I don't think he's going to be a starter.
Yeah, so. He can play guard on both sides, and he can play right tackle. Like, he's not going to start unless someone gets hurt.
I disagree, guys. I think that Jeff Schwartz is your day one right tackle starter.
Draft Ronnie Stanley.
Right. Well, not. I don't think that's going
to
happen.
I think you've got a point. It's a contingency in case, you know, someone better is on the board when we get to 16, and it's like, yeah, let's just pass on a tackle.
But I think it turns into one of these things where, you know, he's going to start most of the season, and then he's going to kind of go by the wayside and let the rookie, who they'll eventually draft, take his place. I think he's going to be kind of a mentor to the younger guys. But, I mean, this is a guy that he has starting ability. He started at tackle. He started at guard. I don't think that Michael Ola is going to be able to do what he was able to do last year. I think you got to go with Schwartz day one as your starter and let the rookie build off of that mentorship.
I agree for now. It just depends on who we draft. Like, if we draft the round one tackle, I'm assuming it's going to be Decker or Stanley. And if we do draft either of those two guys, then they're going to be the starter day one.
Look at you guys. We're talking about Lions on the podcast.
Hey, look at us.
Yeah, if you draft anybody in the first round, they're definitely going to be a starter day one.
Sure. All right, do you want to take another Lions question, or you want to take a... Actually, you know what? I think this is kind of Lions-ish. It's very short, though. Jacob NL just succinctly asks, NFL games in China?
No.
No.
Not feeling it?
Yes.
Stupid.
Not yet.
Yes.
Like, yes. I mean, I get basketball over there. I'm not getting football. I don't know what it is about football that just makes me not think of it as much of an international sport.
Expand your hashtag brand.
Okay.
What's the time zone out there?
I don't know, man. It's definitely like next day ish because like it crosses the, you know, international date line and everything.
I know is I don't like getting up at 9 o'clock in the morning and watching Lions football.
Oh, you'll have to get up at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to watch football then.
Okay, then it's not happening then.
Like I just don't see it working. It's just
guys, it's 11:27 a.m. in China right now.
And we are recording at like half to midnight.
Yeah. So that means if it was a 1 p.m. game, it would be at 1 in the morning.
Yeah, there's no way that they could pull this off.
I don't see why the players union would even like the players are already belly aching enough about going to London. Now you want to take them to China too? Come on, man.
Well, just make it a primetime game. It doesn't have to be a 1 o'clock start.
Yeah, but if it's a primetime game, it means they're playing. Yeah, they'd have to get all the players would have to be playing at 7 a.m. local.
Guys,
I don't see why they don't just
down.
Go to
let's,
Mexico.
Let's just take it slow. Let's keep it at London.
Like, if you're going to go international, do Mexico, do Canada, because you already know, like, Canada already knows what football is and everything. Like, just, there's no need to be, I understand China's the big player on the block for this, but I don't know, like, I feel like the NFL thinks it's something it's not. Like, it wants to be baseball, it wants to be basketball, and that those sports have roots across the world. American football really doesn't. It is consumed because of what it is, but I don't think anyone's, like, dying for the NFL to come over and play a game to inspire some grassroots American football in their backyard.
That's a good point. Does China even care about football?
I mean, basketball's erupted over there in a way no one saw coming, and a lot of that's because of Yao Ming, who is going into the Basketball Hall of Fame, rightly so, because he's great and also kind of inspired the CBA.
The Hall of Fame?
The Basketball Hall of Fame, yeah.
Are we joking?
No, we talked about this last night. The Basketball Hall of Fame, Yao Ming, is being inducted.
Why?
Talk about this?
Because he's a really good Ryan, back me up on this. Yao Ming was a very good basketball player.
For like a year?
granted that his career was cut short by injuries, he was a wonderful basketball player. Just keep in mind that the Basketball Hall of Fame doesn't matter.
Yeah, the Basketball Hall of Fame puts in, like, everyone.
I can agree with that. Because
they put in everybody.
He hung in there versus Shaq, but it was for, like, a year.
So it's like the WWE Hall of Fame, then.
Oh.
There we go.
Yeah, great segue.
Because Snoop Dogg made it into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Before we get to the WWE questions, let's get this one last one here about films. Darkus asks, Batman versus Superman or Waterworld? Which is the worst film?
Waterworld.
I feel like both these films are going to have a bad rap, because I think Waterworld's better than people. Like, people think Waterworld's, like, the worst film of all time. It's not. It's fine.
I think Waterworld is the reverse Mad Max.
Batman versus Superman is clearly better than Waterworld.
Absolutely.
Like way better. Yeah.
Ryan?
I don't know, man. life. Say love me.
Search your feelings. You know it to be true.
I can't mind that movie anymore.
All right. Let's move on to WrestleMania talks and WWE. We are, as they say, yes, on the road to WrestleMania. So we got some questions about that, and I'm very thankful to the people who gave us the WrestleMania questions. Let's start with Clytus from Twitter, at not a leader. Should we riot when Bo Dallas does not win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal?
No.
Absolutely.
What?
I love Bo Dallas.
Look, dude, they're holding WrestleMania in Dallas.
If any of those guys should win, it should be Curtis Axel.
If any, I'm sorry, Mike, go on.
If any of the social outcasts should be winning that, it should be Curtis Axel. I mean, if Curtis Axel doesn't win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, then we riot.
Ooh. Why do we want Bo Dallas to win this? Just because it's in Dallas?
Why didn't I get any support on my Curtis Axel thing?
Because it's Curtis Axel. That's because it's Bo Dallas. Like, what are we talking about right now?
Like, it's the Battle Royale, like, period. Like, who cares?
Does anyone watch it?
Is this going to be on? Is that on the pre-show this year? Or did they move it to the? Did they move it to the actual taping?
I would imagine that this is going to be another pre-show.
I'm pretty sure it's pre-show. Like, 90% certain it's pre-show.
I'm still upset that Brad Maddox did not win like a couple of years ago.
Okay, you're still hung up over that. That clearly explains why you need Bo Dallas to win this, or else you're going to freak out.
By the way, before we dive into more wrestling talk, if you hate wrestling this week, you are in a bad spot, because SportsCenter has decided they are going to be broadcasting live all day from AT&T Stadium in Arlington, yes, from the site of WrestleMania, and talking about wrestling. So if you really are on this bandwagon of a person who still thinks that you're doing the world a service by telling people who watch wrestling that it's fake, like they don't know, this is going to be a really bad week for you, because there's going to be a lot of people who really enjoy WrestleMania, who may not be wrestling fans but still enjoy WrestleMania, all out here watching WrestleMania, and it's going to be on your most sportsiest of sports channel.
And to those people, and go ahead and bleep this out, Chris, you, all right? Telling me that it's fake.
Mr. Tater Salad from the comments asks, will Bobby Roode show up at WrestleMania and pin Roman Reigns for the title after he beats Triple H? Will AJ Styles pin Roman Reigns? Will someone please pin Roman Reigns? Anyone?
I really think... Go ahead, Alex.
Okay, I was going to say, like, at the beginning, I wasn't feeling that question. But once you got to the end, I was definitely feeling that question. Please, somebody pin Roman Reigns.
I really think that Seth Rollins is going to be involved in the main event somehow. Really? I don't know. I don't know if he's going to come out and return and say, "Hey, I never lost my title. I want to be in this match," or whatever. I don't know if this is just a dream that I'm just hoping that it happens. But I just feel like Seth Rollins is going to come back during the main event and affect it in some way, or at least I just hope that happens.
Can we explain to the Wrestle Curious who are still listening who Roman Reigns is and why everyone seems to be very angry at him?
Roman Reigns is
Try to be objective, please.
Okay, let's try to be objective. Roman Reigns is challenging Triple H for the WWE heavyweight title, which is like supposed to be the biggest title in this. This is what everyone fights over all the time in the drama that is the WWE. Roman Reigns is what is called in wrestling parlance a face, or at least they're trying to put him over as a baby face. And the problem is that his character is like, when the WWE tries to sell a face, sometimes they try too hard and it comes off as just bad. Like, it just comes off as a guy who you're just kind of like, you're just not feeling it about him. And a lot of people had this problem with John Cena for a long time, even though Cena has probably more respectable traits to him. A lot of people don't like Reigns because what is it about him? It feels like he is being pushed and no one is, like, he has no presence on the microphone at all. And everyone feels like he's a nice technical wrestler, but that's really where it ends. And there's no reason why he should be contending for the belt, which means if you're contending for the belt, you are literally the face of the WWE. You get to be going on like all the shows and talking to all the people. You're like the main hero or anti-hero or whatever of all the storylines that go on. And a lot of people just don't think Roman Reigns is that great of a character or even a wrestler, that they just don't want to see this happening. But it feels like the corporation is just pushing this nonstop. And people, when that happens, they push back.
Well, it's this idea that he's going to be the next flag bearer. You had Hogan, you had Austin, you had John Cena, and now they are trying so hard to find this next guy, and I guess they want it to be Roman Reigns, but they're pushing it so hard on the public that the public just hates it, and he can't do anything on the mic. His ring work is not that great. I mean, he's not much of a storyteller in the ring. You're not going to get a catch-as-catch-can match from him. You're not going to get Shawn Michaels-worthy 45 minutes of glory match from Roman Reigns. You're basically going to get almost every match from him is going to be Roman Reigns is going to be getting beat up for about 20 minutes, and then he's going to come back, do a Superman punch, do a spear, and win the match. And people are just sick of seeing that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you already wore people out with that act because that was like Cena's whole act. But the difference with Cena has a mic presence and kids really like Cena. I don't think Reigns has any niche like that. And that's the problem if you're confused why people are getting so high up on it, it's like if you're reading a book and there's like the main character is just a doofus and you don't like the main character at all. And yet the author keeps pushing him to be this great, glorious hero that keeps saving the world. That's what Roman Reigns is, and you're just not feeling it.
But at least Cena can put on a really good match when it matters. I mean, the match he had with CM Punk at Money in the Bank, it's probably one of the best matches of all time. I mean, Dave Meltzer gave it a 5-star match. He's only given out like 4 or 5 of those to the WWE. I mean, Cena can go. Reigns clearly can't.
Cena was the best part of 2015, honestly. Like, He made Kevin Owens, like, when he came back.
Yeah, and I think WrestleMania is really missing Cena right now, like, for that reason. Because Cena sells to a lot of people who aren't full-on wrestle fans either. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm less in deep than you guys are when it comes to this. And I just, yeah, I don't feel it because I just see Reigns out there and I'm just kind of like, you know, there's other guys here that make for more interesting faces. Like Dean Ambrose is making for a hell of a face right now.
Oh, he's awesome right now.
Like he's getting, like, that is probably going to be the highlight of WrestleMania is Brock Lesnar versus Dean Ambrose. Because Dean Ambrose is like getting all these, because it's like a street match thing too. And Dean Ambrose has been going around for weeks collecting weapons from these like WWE greats. He's getting like Nick Foley's like barbed wire wrapped bat. He's getting
Terry Funk's chainsaw. Yeah. Chainsaw Charlie. Yeah. Everything short of Abdullah the Butcher coming out with a fork. I mean, they could have really put him over that way, but that just got way too obscure. Well, maybe I might be the only person on this podcast who, I don't want to say I'm a Reigns supporter, but I don't mind what's going on with Roman Reigns right now. I don't mind his story. I don't mind him as a main eventer. I think that he's a sound wrestler. Does he have room for improvement? Yes, he's not a technical, you know, master like Bret Hart. He's not He's not as charismatic as The Rock. That's great, but we need to kind of like readjust our expectations of this WrestleMania, because there are so many wrestlers that are injured. Let me throw something out here that might blow all of your guys' minds. There is not a single wrestler who walked out with a championship belt last year at WrestleMania 31 that will be wrestling at WrestleMania 32.
Yeah, that's right, because Rollins is hurt, Cena is hurt. Who won the Intercontinental belt that year?
Daniel Bryan.
Who won the tag team? Was that
Cesaro and Tyson Kidd, both two guys who will not be wrestling at WrestleMania?
That's right,
none of these guys, who won championship belts at WrestleMania.
And these injuries are real, by the way. I had someone like rolling his eyes when I was telling him this, but like, there's no real way to not hurt when you're like jumping off a top rope onto like an announce table. Like, or like, you still, like, the punches may be pulled, but when you get slammed onto the mat and everything, those are real impacts. Like, this does, and WWE is turning more high-flying than ever. It's taking notes from, like, Lucha, from Lucha Libre and everything, just being more acrobatic about how it styles its choreography now. And that matters, because guys, that's more injury-prone.
Yeah, so, to circle back to the question, will anybody pin Roman Reigns? Probably not, because this is the story. This is the story that WWE tells, and especially at WrestleMania, usually it's an event that culminates with the top guy in the company, or the company, you know, the guy that they're at least trying to push. It culminates in his winning of the title. That's how it goes.
I think that's right. I think they'll like let him get the title and then kind of shuffle on from him. But I
there's a way to do it right. I mean, when Reigns won the title from Sheamus before he lost it, you know, he was so over, especially in a crowd like Philadelphia that is so persnickety about hardcore wrestling and really just being totally against the establishment that WWE is. When they were able to have Roman Reigns, Superman punch Vince McMahon in the face, and granted he was, beating a guy like Sheamus who, was just the right heel at the right time that nobody wanted to have the title. There's a way to tell a story in which Roman Reigns wins the title that, people can get on board with. I think that's the point that I'm trying to make, is that nobody needs to pin Roman Reigns. He can win the title and we can move on from here. Guys get healthy.
Our own Jerry Mallory presents a alternative view, and he wants you to guys take on this scenario. I predict Roman Reigns turns heel and turns on The Rock at WrestleMania. It's the only option.
I actually was thinking something like that too, and I think really the only way this main event match is going to work is if there's some sort of double turn. Triple H
I can see it, like,
out the face and Reigns walks out the heel champion. I think that's the only way it's going
to
work.
Reigns has been having kind of in a few events leading up to it, just kind of this mean streak where he just goes crazy berserk and starts ruining everything. Like, he just beats up everyone or something. Like, I could see it. I don't think it'll happen, but I could see it.
If Reigns finally turns heel, I will mark out. Like, I've been waiting for this for so long. Like, there's no way that he can keep being faced. Like, everybody's just booing him, and he's just so bad on the microphone. Like, he needs to just beat the crap out of somebody and just turn heel finally.
Yeah, I think that's the only way that they can get him over.
Ryan, your thoughts on that?
I don't think it's the only way that you can get him over. I think that a Roman Reigns heel turn is something that a lot of people want, and that's fine. I mean, there always has to be some kind of swerve that happens at the end of the WrestleMania, match, right? I mean, something has to happen that's unexpected.
Seth Rollins has to run out and, like, pin Reigns.
Yeah,
or
Daniel Bryan has to insert him in the, insert himself into the, main event match at WrestleMania. So just going back the past two WrestleManias, there's always some kind of swerve that happens at the end of the title match that usually sends all of the fans home happy in some regard. So
yeah, and it sets up all the drama for the Raw the next day, and then the whole rest of the calendar year for the storylines. It just sets up the next storylines to come out of there.
And that's the most interesting aspect of wrestling, and something that I don't think a lot of people who watch wrestling, or people who even watch wrestling, they don't really understand, that they have to think about scope and sequence for 365 days. Like, I mean, wrestling, the story does not stop. the story does not end, right, you know, at WrestleMania. I mean, that may be the culminating event, but guess what? Turn on USA Network on Monday, and there's going to be another show.
Yes,
well,
sir.
they're gonna have to come strong and do something spectacular in that main event, because with all these matches, all these great matches leading up to it, I mean, I think everybody's gonna be pretty tired by the time that main event
comes. I think this is kind of the benefit of WrestleMania being an event for more than just wrestling fans, because I don't think non-wrestling fans understand kind of the WWE fans kind of antipathy for Reigns as so much. So I think it'll go over that way, at least with them. But yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the rest of this card, man. Like, oh my God. Like, we talked about Dean Ambrose, Brock Lesnar, but Shane O'Mac, Taker, what might be Taker's last fight, like, match at WrestleMania ever. There's just so much. Callisto is fighting Ryback. I know that's not really up for you guys, but I am over for Callisto.
Yeah, and it's in Dallas too. Like, this has to be the biggest WrestleMania ever.
And Rock will be there, and I'm hearing Austin is going to be in the house as well.
Oh yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah, they'll have the old timers too. But like, just the Shane O'Mac thing alone, I think they will try to really up the importance of that. How do you guys see that going over, by the way?
So hold on. So the word on the street too, though, is that the main event is Shane O'Mac versus Undertaker. Like, that's going to be the last match. Yeah, that's going to be the last match that they.
Not the WWE title thing.
No,
really.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if they do that, and that's kind of like that would be correcting a big mistake there. I'm with Brian. I think they should do that.
Yeah, I can see that too, because like the way they've been billing the Shane O'Mac thing, for those who don't know, like Shane O'Mac, if he wins the thing with Taker, he basically, as Vince McMahon's son, gets control of Monday Night Raw, which then means he gets control of the corporation and whatever crazy convoluted storyline it is. He doesn't actually get control, I'm sure. Like, Vince still controls the bookings behind the scenes. But, like, that's kind of been set up as being, like, the biggest showdown. Plus, a character like Taker, who is, like, a legend beyond just, you know, wrestling.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, the problem is Taker in main event form at this point in his career? I mean,
this has to be the last one. This absolutely has to be the last one.
This has to be it. I mean, look at the guy. He's balding. He looks like he's going to tell somebody to get off his lawn. I mean, I just cannot. I can't take it seriously anymore.
Has he only fought twice this year?
All my life, almost.
Did he only fight twice last year? He fought at SummerSlam against Brock Lesnar, and then he fought at WrestleMania before that. Has he only fought twice in 2015?
No, he fought at Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay.
Didn't him and Kane do a tag match too on Raw?
They did, against the Wyatts, right?
Yep, I believe so.
Okay, so that's four times still.
Yeah, I mean, he is, you know, wrestling on this reduced schedule, kind of like, you know, what Brock Lesnar does. He takes on this this lightened schedule in order to accommodate for the fact that he's, you know, in his 50s and still wrestling, which is just insane. I mean, a guy who's portrayed like an undead wizard his entire successful wrestling career, still wrestling into his 50s is mind-boggling, considering the kind of mileage he has on his body. But
I mean, Sting was doing that too, but yeah.
Yeah, and while Sting's going into the Hall of Fame, along with The Godfather, a guy who would bring out a line of women as his ho train.
Amen. Amen.
The 90s were a real wild time, man.
Wrestling's come a long way, like, in regards to what it is, and it is still very much so just stereotypical, like, kind of offensive Americana.
Well, the interesting thing is, when you're walking up to let's maybe bring this back to football a little bit, because we're going to talk about AT&T Stadium. When you walk up to Jerry World, the banner that they have on the front, the people in the middle are Charlotte, Sasha Banks, and Becky Lynch.
Really,
Sasha?
Yeah, and then they're flanked on the right and the left by I think like Shane O'Mac and Taker and Triple H and Reigns. So, you know, just the fact that they're, you know, giving so much concern and putting so much effort into telling the Divas storyline.
That's fascinating, too. That fight is fascinating. That's going to be that triple threat with Becky Lynch, Sasha Banks, and Charlotte. And yeah. I think I'm kind of ready for Charlotte to give up the belt, and I think that she will.
To Sasha, please, God. Please.
Yeah, I don't think Becky's going to get it. I like Becky, but I don't think she's going to get it. It's, this storyline's been set up for Sasha.
Incredible.
I don't know if you guys saw this, but I saw this rumor that the Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania, they're basically going to completely overhaul the women's division, like get rid of the Divas title and bring back the women's championship and
rebrand it. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. They've been talking about that for a while. I mean, that belt is a little condescending, that it's like, you know,
a giant butterfly.
Yeah, a giant pink butterfly. Yeah, yeah. Like they can up the maturity a little bit.
They can.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like we said, wrestling has come a long way since the late 90s.
Yeah, it's still got its problems, but yeah, like versus the 90s, which was like the bleeding stone ages.
Yeah. Women are no longer stripping each other down to their undergarments in order to win the match, so we've come a long ways.
I mean, they're still wearing certain outfits that, you know, but whatever.
But hey, but then again, I'm looking at Triple H and he's got a pair of trunks on.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, he's in the Speedo. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, he looks damn good. I mean,
but he's not wearing a Speedo that's like, you know, got sequins all over it.
He should.
Maybe that's his plan against Roman Reigns.
Hey, I'm okay with Paige looking the way she does, guys.
I love Paige.
Oh, Paige is great.
it's been well documented in the Slack app.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, final, I think we've got to about wrap it up. So any final thoughts about WrestleMania? We'll start with Mike.
They just got to do something in that main event that's going to be able to get the crowd back on their feet, because they're going to be so tired after seeing Dean Ambrose and Brock Lesnar and AJ Styles and Jericho again in that ladder match. There's just so many great matches leading up to that main event that I just think the crowd is going to be sitting on their feet as quiet as can be once that main event comes on.
Alex?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be the biggest WrestleMania ever. It's in Dallas, so there's got to be something crazy that happens. All I care about is Sasha winning, and I care about that Intercontinental Championship match.
My final thoughts is, like, this thing keeps getting bigger and bigger and keeps drawing in more and more fans. And it's kind of cool. Like, I mean, I understand, you know, yeah, we get it. It's fake. But, I mean, you can enjoy a good storyline. Like, I mean, you can enjoy a really good storyline, especially when it's set up perfectly for this. Ryan, your final thoughts.
You know what? It's a Sunday. You don't have any football. It's an opportunity for you to, you know, maybe get with your kids. Maybe get with any like nieces or nephews and just let them enjoy the extravaganza, the granddaddy of them all that is WrestleMania.
And it'll be free if you sign up for WWE Network for that first month or so.
I mean,
yeah,
you got a free month.
For a free month for you to get WrestleMania for free, I mean, come on, take advantage of it. And you know what? There's always the chance that we could see, you know, a particular individual show up who hasn't been on TV in a while and...
Oh, you know, well, let's just say it already. Let's just put it right here now. John Cena!
May. Monday, May 9th.
Chris, can you tell me that story about you?
Jesus Christ, please no. Jesus Christ.
I just heard you say you turned the recorder on, so I just...
I'm off the podcast if this is a discussion.